Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Greg Lalavie. He is the business manager of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825. Greg, welcome back.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here.
And it's always great to talk to you. I'm particularly interested right now for our viewers. We're talking in mid-November. This is just about the one-year anniversary of the signing of the big infrastructure bill in Washington. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on that, the progress there. But I wanted to start with an op-ed piece that you wrote in NorthJersey.com, essentially taking on some critics of some of these big transportation projects that you folks have been working on and that a lot of folks have been counting on. Essentially, your argument is that these folks don't know what they're talking about. They're short-sighted. These projects are necessary, and waiting for new technology or new kinds of things to come down the pipe isn't feasible. I'm curious though, what prompted you to write this? What were you hearing that bothered you so much about what was going on?
It was really a chorus of antis that hasn't really stopped.
Okay.
When we talk about the Turnpike expansion, I made my bones out in the field as an operating engineer, as a crane operator. I worked on several of the high rises in Jersey City. What we heard during that time was, hey, the idea here for the benefit of New Jersey is to try to lure New York companies here.
Right.
We have the workforce that lives in northern New Jersey and all the bedroom communities that we know. We want to attract those people here. So when I read the steady heartbeat of criticism about there's only two lanes into the Holland Tunnel, this has little to do with the Holland Tunnel. This has a lot to do with the vibrancy of the economy we've tried to create over 30 years in Jersey City. And for those people who want to talk about, well, can this bridge potentially handle mass transit? Well, of course, but you can't be for robust mass transit and against the transit grid that provides reliability into the system. So when you see the antis have policy positions that conflict with each other, you have to have a lot of empathy here for somebody like Governor Murphy. He's trying to come up with policy directions that keep an economy going, make our state a great place to live. And people who would otherwise be called his allies are very cutely putting themselves in a position where he's wrong either way.
Right.
And you just can't have that. You have to be for something. You can be for mass transit, but you have to realize that you need reliability in the power with transit grid.
Okay.
If it's natural gas, that might be inconvenient today, but that's not forever.
Right.
So, that's really what's prompted me to step into this and try to, I would hope, add some kind of sanity to the conversation that's going on.
Okay. So the objections you were hearing were mostly from environmental groups and environmental activists. Is that correct? I mean, I'm trying to read between the lines because there's just the objection of increased traffic and emissions and things like that. Is that basically who you're talking about?
And mostly those groups. Okay. and then pushing political allies into really bad policy decisions, because the same people that would complain about emissions on the Turnpike extension, that project, and I wrote about this, from design to engineering to permitting to construction, we're talking about a 10-year window. If I were to believe those same critics, I'd be in an electric car by then. So, New Jersey is, if you looked at the list of states that are bending most toward electric cars, New Jersey's ahead of California,
okay,
easily in the top 10. And, our Northeast corridor for transit purposes, 7 of the 10 states in the top 10 for acceptance of electric cars are in the Northeast corridor. So
Okay. The
emissions problem we're working on, and we're making progress. This is about progress. There's no there's no big Frankenstein switch on the wall to change it all instantly.
Right, exactly. Okay, you anticipated where I was going to go with my first question. That is, you talk about two different kinds of related but different kinds of projects. The first is the road projects, which you just mentioned, particularly the Turnpike widening into the Holland Tunnel, and the other one is transit projects. I'm curious, first of all, about the road projects. You mentioned the turnpike. Are there others that you think are vital that either need to be put on the drawing board or are on the drawing board already and ready to go? What are the most important projects at this point in terms of road projects, widening, firming up the infrastructure? What are you looking at the right now?
Sure. Anything that keeps things freely flowing in and around the port area of Newark and Elizabeth, which is why we're so focused on Turnpike extension. We have warehouses and logistics centers rising in Bayonne. I don't know how the opponents of this project figure that gets around. Mm-hmm. We've made ourselves such a logistics center. We have probably the greatest port on the East Coast, can move the most goods. It houses, I would argue, the most direct and indirect jobs in the state of New Jersey. I think we have to take a good look at, you know, the rest of the Turnpike. We did a huge expansion in 2010 and beyond, unsnarling that 8A. We've moved that snarling a little bit south. So I think we really need to look at that. And all of the major roads that lead to and from Port Newark, and then also anything that would fall into the freight rail, anything that might fall into air traffic. You know, it's Bob Rowe always called transportation multimodal and intermodal. So we have to expand on the great jewel and job creator that the port is and make sure that we service that port robustly.
Okay. Are you, and you, what you talk mainly about now is sort of industrial traffic, trucking in and out of warehouses, in and out of the port and things like that. In your piece, you did mention commuters though. Which of those is the most important, or are they both equally vital as far as you're concerned?
I think it's equal. We talk very often in New Jersey that we are very cultured on our cars. Mm-hmm. And I think if we looked at data, it would be fair to say that post-pandemic, we have not returned as robustly to mass transit yet. I believe that's getting better every day. But one only has to look to the traffic on the Turnpike heading for New York City to realize that we're in our cars. We're cultured on our cars. We love our vehicles in this state. So anything that relieves choke points along the traffic system, you know, we're the most congested political entity on the planet. And one of our great gifts is what Ben Franklin said 250 years ago. We're that space between New York and Philadelphia.
We have both ends, yes.
we have a lot to offer, but we have to maximize on that location and take care of transportation all the way around.
Okay. I ask because I think there is a distinction. And I think that, again, I'm just playing devil's advocate, putting myself in the position of the critics you were taking on there. The argument that I've heard, and this goes back to the days of Robert Moses and his building in New York, was that if you increase capacity on a roadway, very quickly it fills the capacity and you're back to the same place you were. Now it seems to me that in the industrial context, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, if stuff is coming in from overseas and the volumes are increasing, you're going to have to move that. Do you see the same distinction between that and the commuting problem, the answer being not so much to widen the Turnpike to allow more cars to get through the tunnel, but to reduce the number of cars on the road, and that will bring us to the mass transit problem?
But I think you just hit it there, the mass transit problem. So what are we doing to solve the problem? Transit grid would add the necessary energy to make robust transit possible. Yeah, we can talk ad nauseum about the Hudson River rail tunnels that we so desperately want to do. We're finally working on the choke point known as the Portal Bridge, and we'll alleviate that over the next 4 years before the new bridge is put in service. So building out the mass transit, the thing is, people are commuting to work today, and multimodal is really the way to go. Another pandemic, people are going to be off mass transit again and back on the roads.
Right.
And those backups on the Turnpike, they extend all the way past Newark Airport for the Newark Bay extension. And I would defy anybody to go past the Parkway interchange to the Turnpike around Woodbridge at anywhere between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. It's already backed up.
Right.
So, I mean, these are serious and they cascade back into our towns and snarl traffic very far away from the initial choke point.
Right. And you do see that. I mean, you mentioned the pandemic, the traffic after the pandemic, which has been, to my mind, it far worse than it was even before the pandemic. I don't know how that happened, but it's, you know, just recently, about back in the beginning of October, I was sitting on the turnpike on the extension, and the volume of cars and the volume of trucks and trailers, the tractors that were going in and out of the port was just astounding. In your experience, are we seeing even more traffic than before the pandemic?
Absolutely. I think part of it is we haven't seen a move back to mass transit. So we have those 200 and some thousand daily commuters heading back to New York City that are on the road now and not on the train. And you don't see very many people, two and three in a car. You see one. That's just the way we do it. So, you know, but when people argue that roads don't make a difference, I can remember when 287 ended in Booton and did not go all the way through. I can look at a choke point that Route 18 was through New Brunswick, and I know from driving it that it flows more freely now.
Right.
I know from the Turnpike expansion that was done in the 2010s, the choke point, the funnel point for that was right in front of the 825 Training Center in South Brunswick. So we saw the traffic. And now we don't. It's very clear that you can alleviate these choke points.
Okay, and you did. Then what you mentioned electric buses and the objection from some critics about New Jersey Transit buying more diesel buses, and the idea that electric buses are not going to be feasible for a while. I'm curious how you square that with your contention that electric cars will, by the time these projects are done, particularly the turnpike you mentioned, the turnpike widening, that electric vehicles will be adopted to such an extent that you won't have the same kind of emissions, that you won't have the same sort of gasoline powered, you know, fossil fuel powered vehicles on the street, on the roadways.
Well, I think part of the point really was that the people making the point for emissions are the same people making the point that we will all be in electric cars. So their points conflict with each other. That being said, when it comes to electric vehicles, we do have robust infrastructure being built here. They are coming more online, but there are other issues to talk about when we talk about energy in general. What is the weight of a car on a battery? What does a battery cost? Mm-hmm. Where are the rare earth materials to find the materials to build the batteries? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think we can be 100% sure that we can have an all-electric fleet by day X. I'm not completely sure that those materials are going to be available. And even if they are, we're still not over the supply chain issues in all the other goods and services that move today. So those commuters need to be on buses today. And even if we're buying diesel buses today, they have the better engines that do less emissions. We're making progress. The people who only want to say no, again, think that there's a Frankenstein switch on the wall and you can do it all now, and not giving credit to making progress. You know, being in construction and being somebody who does speak positively about natural gas, 20 years ago, I stood shoulder to shoulder with environmentalists when we talked about natural gas being the clean replacement for coal.
Right.
Suddenly, natural gas is the dirtiest thing that they see. Again, their positions conflict with themselves.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you about that in a little while, but since you brought it up, the fact is, you know, you and I have talked about this before, about the importance of the wind port and wind energy and all those other sorts of alternative energy infrastructure projects that seem to be coming down and seem now to be actually moving, particularly offshore wind. And again, you seem in those discussions, you're on the same side as the people you're criticizing in this piece.
Well, I do believe wholeheartedly in all of the above strategy.
There you go.
I think that the more options we have to put energy in the grid, the more robust the grid is, the more reliable the grid is, the better economy that we'll have in the end. businesses cite by energy cost and availability.
Right.
You've seen the rise of the steel market in Western Pennsylvania. That's on natural gas being available there. Natural gas is not available here.
Okay.
But offshore wind may be. Maybe that's our answer to the return of manufacturing in our state.
Okay. All right. I asked that because I was curious about the kind of reaction you've gotten. I'm imagining your environmentalist allies on that side were probably not terribly happy. What have you heard about the what some others people might think of your piece?
Well, I'm aware of people who disagree with it. You know, I read in the paper. I don't know who to attribute this quote to, but somebody talked about the 70 degree days during November. And I'm not a climate denier by any stretch of the imagination,
right?
But I can mine weather data. And I'd like to ask that same person about the day in November that Jersey City registered a temperature of 96 back in the 30s. So, you know, these events do happen. And again, it's no reason to panic. This is about making progress, continuing to make progress. And when policymakers, you know, like the Department of Transportation, the governor and his commissioner, Diane Scicchetti, make a decision to buy diesel buses with better, lower emission engines, the world didn't just end. Mm-hmm. Let's celebrate that we took a step forward and we're a day closer to a robust electric bus when we can make that investment. The other option would be to leave the older buses on the road. I don't see that as an option. If we want to make progress toward having a goal and cleaning the environment, let's continue to make progress toward that goal.
Okay. Well, now speaking of progress, then when the infrastructure bill was signed a year ago, there was a lot of optimism that there was going to be a lot of money flowing. Criticism I've heard from your colleagues and from other business leaders, from builders, from developers, is that the state is moving much too slowly. I'm curious where you see we are now as opposed to a year ago. Have we made any progress, and are you happy with the pace that this progress is being made?
Well, we all want to make faster progress.
Right.
So that being said, infrastructure and designing, engineering, permitting projects takes time. And it's not going to be an instant gratification piece. In a perfect world, if I got to write policy, I would waive most of the permitting stuff for infrastructure projects and move the money as fast as we can, because I think most of these things go through grant programs in the federal government where if we don't use it, other states can put chits in and try to grab it. And what I like to think of New Jersey is I feel we're the only significant state that got 100% of our congressional delegation to vote for this bill and stand behind it despite any of the headwinds. And I believe that that's a mandate for our policymakers to capitalize on every opportunity. But you can't design a new road and have a shovel in the ground in 2 weeks. It just doesn't happen like that.
Okay. And the main problem the main obstacle is permitting. Is this on, and then that's, is that on the local level, the state level? I mean, where is the choke point, to use your phrase, in getting the money out there? Is it state agencies? Is it local people? What's the problem?
It's multiple levels, really. Okay. And if you were to look at, you know, agencies, the Parkway, Turnpike, you know, now one authority, though they used to be two. They use all of their own money to do all of their projects because they just don't want to deal with any of the federal regs. So where we don't have that luxury in other places, nor should we not take advantage of federal dollars that are available to build our roads and bridges. But it comes down to it's a multifaceted thing and something, you know, in my world, I wish policymakers would take a real good look at how we permit things and how we move things through, because we lose 30 to 35% of a project cost is really on the front end and the soft cost. And I think we could spend money better getting the shovels in the ground and the projects built.
Okay. And finally, before I let you go, I'm curious as to what your assessment is of the outlook. I mean, are you optimistic about what's going on, about what can happen? I ask in part because at this, or we're talking on November 16th again, we still don't know what the political complexion of what Washington is going to look like. We have a better idea now than we did a month ago, but that's still up in the air. There's obviously going to be some uncertainty in what looks like divided government, at least partially. What are you worried about? What do you think might be happening over the next, say, the next 2 years? I mean, until we get into the next presidential campaign.
I would subscribe to the theory that I think divided government's not the worst thing in the world. I think they have to find ways to come to the middle. From just a political viewpoint, I believe the last three elections, the electorate has sent a pretty loud message to the extremes of both sides that they want things more in the middle and more in the center of the pendulum and not to the outsides of it. So I'm optimistic in how things are going to go, because I think there's going to have to be enough conversations that happen, or if they don't over the next 2 years, I'm very confident that the electorate will once again send a resounding message to those that are resisting, just having thoughtful conversations.
Okay. Well, speaking of thoughtful conversations, it's always good to have one with you. I appreciate it. I hope you come back at some point and talk about this some more, because it's going to be, I think, an ongoing process to get these things funded and get them moving. So
now it is a process, and I'll come back anytime. I enjoy our chats all the time, Jeff.
Oh, me too. Okay. Greg Lalavi, business manager in the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it as well.
And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.